Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, and we are so excited to be with you. Robin's in studio. Robin, you want to just say hi?
Hello. Yes, I have been doing some traveling, so I missed the last maybe two recordings.
Yes.
But today is a good one.
I know. So I had to go rogue because you weren't here.
She has no problem going rogue. We know that.
I have missed Robin exceedingly.
Oh, I've missed you too.
But what a great way to come back together in studio, because I am so excited about our guest, Sharon Markey. I have known Sharon since she was very little, and I knew Sharon's grandmother and grandfather. Her aunt used to be my Sunday school teacher, one of my favorite Sunday school teachers. So we have a history, you know. We're kind of related, you know. You find that like in the Christian world, though, in Jesus, like things get so small, you can like trace your heritage and say, actually, we're related. You know, my parents went to that church or whatever. So it's really, really special to have Sharon. I've kind of followed her life from afar and all the adventures, but everyone would be really excited just to talk about what was going on. So Sharon, as you know, I told you before we started, I want it from the beginning. And one of the really exciting things is that Sharon does not live in the United States. You live presently, you live in the Ukraine, right?
Well, now we live in Hungary.
Hungary. Safer.
Yeah. We were in Ukraine for many years.
Yeah. But you're still doing Ukraine relief.
That's correct.
From Hungary.
We are focused on ministering to Ukrainian refugees in Europe.
Yeah, that is amazing.
I can't wait to hear this.
Oh, yeah. No, it gets...
Welcome, Sharon. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
It's going to be so, so good. But that's where she is right now. But that's not where your origins are from. So tell us about everything.
Okay. Well, I was born in Hawaii on the island of Oahu.
Oh.
And when I was a year and a half old, my dad wrote to Pastor Chuck and asked if there was any place for him to minister in the church here, because he had grown up under Chuck's teaching way back when Chuck and Kay still lived in Corona, in the Corona Christian Fellowship. And when my dad grew up, he didn't really know what he wanted to do with his life. He got a pilot's license, and he was doing fish spotting in Hawaii, which is where you fly around above the ocean, and you're working with fishermen in a boat, and you spot the schools of fish and help them lay the net around the fish. But he didn't want to do that for the rest of his life, but he just realized he really wanted to be in ministry with, you know, his beloved pastor from his childhood. And Chuck said, come on over. So my mom, my dad, and I, we moved over to California. So I grew up in Southern California, but my roots are in Hawaii. It's what I've always considered home. Most of my relatives are still there. But when I was five, my mom got cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and she died within 6 months.
Oh.
And at that point, I had a little sister. She was a year and a half old. And so, obviously, that radically changed our lives.
And how old were you?
I was five.
Oh.
And now, your mom had her doctorate, right?
She had a master's degree. In linguistics.
Just brilliant. Brilliant woman.
Yeah, but what a great loss.
And a godly woman. Mm. She never missed the women's prayer meeting at Calvary.
And your mom loved her, Cheryl.
My mom adored adored her. I mean, she would come home with stories about, well, Irma did this, and Irma did that, and Irma said this. And she just felt that she was so committed to the Lord and so brilliant. And then my mom was attracted to people that had calm spirits. And so Irma was kind of a lot like my dad in that she was very calm, you know, very trusting in the Lord. And my mom just was so attracted to that. So those were some of her just high qualities.
Yeah, she was instrumental in my spiritual walk. I don't remember this, but my dad told me that I prayed to receive Jesus into my heart when I was 3 years old with her. And I was too young. I don't remember that. What I do remember is several things. I remember sitting outside the door to my bedroom, listening to her play the guitar and sing inside. And given I had barely turned five when she died, so I assume that memory, she must have already received her diagnosis because, you know, I would have been 4 and a half when she received her diagnosis. And it's hard for me to imagine I would have a memory very much earlier than that. But she was singing the hymn, "Like a River Glorious is God's Perfect Peace, over all victorious in its bright increase. Perfect yet it floweth, fuller every day. Perfect yet it groweth, deeper all the way. And stayed upon Jehovah, hearts are fully blessed, finding as he promised, perfect peace and rest."
I love that hymn.
And it goes on. There's three verses. And I have that memory. It wasn't until I was an adult that I connected the dots and realized she was probably facing her own death as she sang that. Mm-hmm. And the words came to have so much more meaning. Mm-hmm. So she'd set that example for me even. I mean, she was closeted in the room by herself with Jesus singing, but I was sitting right outside, leaning against the door, listening. And I remember the night that she died, my dad was staying at the hospital with her, and my grandparents from Hawaii had come over, and they were staying with my sister and me. And maybe the adults assumed I knew what was going on. I don't know. I didn't know that she could die from what she had.
Oh.
And I was praying that God would heal her, but I wasn't worried. I just wanted her to come home. I didn't think it was between life and death, just you know, having mommy present or having mommy off wherever she was, you know. And so my dad called and let my grandpa know that she had passed. And I was pestering him to let me know, you know, who was on the phone and what did they say. I always did that when someone called. And he seemed very burdened. And he just was kind of slumping against the kitchen counter. He just said, "That was your dad calling from the hospital. Your mom just died."
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people tell me, "Well, you didn't know what that meant. You were too young to understand death." But I remember knowing it meant I was never going to see her again until I went to heaven.
Mm.
I had that knowledge that she was in heaven, and this was goodbye until I got to go to heaven also, which birthed in me this passionate desire to go to heaven.
Yeah. Yes.
Also, I never recall doubting God's love for me. And I think that's a testament to the faith and example of my parents, that it never occurred to me to doubt that. My grandma said I did question God's plan, that before I went to bed that night, I just stopped in the kitchen and said, "I don't understand why Jesus had to take my mommy."
Yeah, that's a good question.
Mm-hmm. But because of God's grace and the spiritual heritage I had, I was set up to be very close to God through all of that. He became my lifeline. And by the time, so I prayed, I don't know, maybe daily, but very often. My first prayer was always for a new mommy. And I know on at least one occasion when I had graduated to a new Sunday school class, the teachers pulling my dad aside when he came to pick me up after class the first day saying, "Are you aware that your daughter's praying for a new mommy?" And he had to explain to them our family history and why that prayer actually made sense. Anyway, by the time I was in fourth grade, I had this, I began to despair that God would ever answer my prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I became all but convinced that it was his intent to never give me a mother, and that broke my heart.
Mm.
But I remember praying. I'd started reading the Bible through the ministry of one of my Sunday school teachers. His name was Barry Kidd. And every week he would say the same thing, "Read your Bibles, read your Bibles." And so in fourth grade, I started my first journey through the Bible, and it took me 2 years to finish. But I'd come to that psalm where it says, "A father to the fatherless is the Lord in his holy habitation."
Mm.
And I just grabbed onto that. I said, "Okay, God, if you never give me a mother, that's okay. You can do that. But you have to be my mother. If you can be a father to the fatherless, you can be a mother to the motherless, and you have to be my mother."
Yeah.
And I would fall asleep. I would cry myself to sleep every night, just praying, "Be my mother, be my mother." And it was the lowest point of my life to that point, because the pain of losing my mom just got worse as the years went by. I think as I came to understand all it meant to not have a mother, and
I'm going to school probably and seeing all these moms picking up their daughters. And
yeah.
Sons.
Oh, and the one thing that was brutal was every year when we would make Mother's Day cards. Oh, I just, right. It was hard.
Right.
And also my peers kind of ostracized me. I was a very lonely girl because I think they didn't, it was common knowledge that my mom had died. And I don't think they knew what to do with me.
Yeah.
I think maybe it scared them, you know?
Yeah.
And so for a number of years, I didn't really have any friends. I remember one time hearing two girls behind me, we were lining up outside after recess, and I heard someone saying, her mom died. Mm. And I turned around and they were whispering. I don't think they meant for me to hear, but she was pointing at me and I turned back around and I just knew that, like, everyone was staring at me and I was different and not, you know, not accepted. But, you know, I had Jesus, and that experience just really cemented our relationship, that he was my everything and I wasn't going to make it through without him. And then amazingly, the summer after fourth grade, God brought my stepmom into our lives in a really miraculous way. And she was Japanese. She is Japanese, I should say, but Japanese citizen. So my mom was also Japanese, but she was a Japanese American, third generation in this country. But Mio, my stepmom, she was born and raised in Osaka, Japan. And God brought her to us in response to a very specific prayer that my dad prayed. At some point, he just got fed up trying to find a wife in Southern California and just said, God, somewhere in your vast family of people on this earth, there must be a woman who will fit in our family. But she's not here. Mm. Bring her to us.
Wow.
And then he just kind of washed his hands of the whole thing. And that set in motion a series of events that brought her to us. First, she had her passport. Well, she was planning to move to Korea, and she had a pastor in Japan tell her, I think God wants you to go to the Youth with a Mission school in Hawaii. And she wouldn't hear of it. She didn't think that was God's will. But then her passport was stolen when she was on a trip to Europe, and it had her visa to Korea. So that got her attention. And so she thought maybe God was saying something. And she looked into what it would take to get a student visa for the U.S., and she came to Hawaii as a student at the Youth with a Mission. It's called the University of the Nations there in Kona, Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And we happened to have friends who were with YWAM. And every summer, my sister and I would go back to Hawaii and stay with our grandparents. And the University of the Nations is on the opposite side of the island. And my dad would come over every summer and we would drive to the other side of the island to see our friends. And so on the summer after fourth grade, we met Mio on that trip, and within a few weeks, they were engaged.
Oh, my goodness. And, wow.
Prayers answered.
And that's an incredibly truncated version of the story. It's just amazing to me how God, she actually recognized my dad when she saw him based on two visions that God had given her in Japan.
Oh, my goodness.
So just amazing God's providence and how he brought it all together. And so that kind of set me up for my own romance story, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one thing I should share beforehand, because this has become something that is a theme for my life, I think, is the value of suffering.
Mm.
When after my dad remarried, I was just so thrilled that finally the desire of my heart had been answered and God had brought a mother into our family. But once I was in junior high, I started to question, okay, everything worked out okay, but Romans 8:28 says all things work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purposes. I believe that, but I don't see how my painful childhood worked out for my good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everything
mm-hmm.
worked out okay. Everything's okay mm-hmm. now, but wouldn't it have been better mm-hmm. if I had grown up normally like all my peers, if I hadn't gone through this great grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wrestling with the Lord about this. And I was at an age where all my peers were interested in boys and makeup and fashion. And I didn't get it. I never had been able to get it. I felt very out of place in the middle of this Southern California materialistic sort of culture. And I have to admit, I was kind of, I was self-righteous about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God, what's wrong with them? How come they don't care about Jesus? Why don't they get it? You know? And he put me on the carpet. He said, if you had not suffered in your childhood, you'd be exactly like them.
Mm.
And I just began to weep and to praise him and to thank him for the gift of suffering. And I do believe now it was a gift that gave me this incredible treasure of Jesus that who knows?
Yeah. And this closeness, closeness. And those are such deep thoughts for nine-year-old and junior high.
Yeah.
You know, but I know too, because when I went to school 1 year here, they were like, into all sorts of things. I'm like, anyone want to talk about the Sermon on the Mount? And like, they're like, who are you? I mean, nobody would even sit with me because they're like, no, you know, and I'm like, okay. I went to public school and those kids would listen, but these kids did not want to hear about the Sermon on the Mount. I still remember just like loving the Sermon on the Mount in junior high. Like, anybody else so excited about this, you know? But so I get you. And I think I've always gotten you that way. So now, you go on and you go to college. So what were your aspirations at this point when you're in college and all that? What were you thinking? Because sometimes we have this idea of this is what God has for my life. And I know your life must have been like that, that this is where I'm going. This is probably what God has. And then, I mean, if ever anyone took like a huge turn of events, it's got to be you. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, actually, I first felt the call to missions when I was in eighth grade.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
It's something I kept very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. I didn't even speak of it until my freshman year of high school. I'd been praying about it. Well, I think my mom, she knew, because it was born after hearing one of her friends, who was a missionary to Jews in Jerusalem, share her testimony and about their ministry. And I was so moved. And I was in tears afterwards. And I just couldn't think of anything else I'd rather do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom noted that. And she knew from that moment on that God was calling me to missions. I don't think I fully realized it until later. But I was praying about it. And then when I was a freshman in high school, I talked to my parents about it. And they were very supportive of it, of course. But I wasn't sure if it was God's calling or just some sort of youthful sort of dream that I was having. So I just kept praying about it. But the desire kept growing.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time I graduated from high school, I was reasonably sure that this was something God was calling me to, because I'd been asking him to take the desire away if it wasn't from him.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad had made an interesting comment when I first told him about it. He said, just make sure you know how to build a tent. I said, do you mean that literally or figuratively? And he said, figuratively. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I said, well, what about medicine? Because I had the grades for it. I had an aptitude for science and an interest in it, actually. And I thought, I could probably get into medical school, and then I could use that anywhere I went, because I didn't know where God was calling me. But I thought, medicine's useful everywhere. So
it is.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I started university, and I still hadn't heard a specific call from God as to location or what type of missions. And so I just told him, I said, okay, I had this four-year full-ride scholarship. And I was looking at the coursework for pre-med. I thought, I've got to start it my first semester. I won't finish within 4 years. And so I said, okay, God, I don't know if this is your will or not, but, you know, I've got to start now if I'm going to finish in time. So if you don't want me to go to medical school, please feel free to change my course. But I'm just going to do this right now because I don't know what else to do. So I declared a major in medical microbiology and started off. And I loved it. You were sharing how you didn't like your college
biology class. That's right. Yeah,
I loved it. It was so much fun. The first day of class, we had this British guy with the accent and everything. He would say vitamin instead of vitamin, and he said, "How many of you are pre-med?" And it's like, I don't even know. More than half the class raised hand and said, "I can tell you right now, you are not all pre-med material."
Oh, wow.
And he said, I taught medical school in England, and if you can survive my class, then you're pre-med material. And it was a lot of fun. It was a great class. I loved it. And
you took the challenge.
Yes. And after that class, I was like, okay, I could do this. I could do medical school. But anyway, I after my first year of college, then I added a second degree in French because I'd taken French in high school, and I could speak it to some extent, and I was starting to lose it. Mm. And I thought, well, I don't want to lose it, so I'll add. I was thinking of adding a minor in French, but then I looked at the French major, and to me, it seemed really small because the medical microbiology major was humongous, and I'm like, oh, I only have to do these classes to get a major. Oh, I'll just add a major in French, and so through that, I got nominated by one of my professors to apply for a job with the French Ministry of Education teaching English conversation classes in the French public school system. And I got accepted. And so I took a year off and moved to France to do that. And during that year, so that was after my second year of college, and I'd been doing all these heavy science classes and studying really hard and barely coming up to breathe. Like it was, right. It was intense. And then suddenly I was working 14 hours a week, and the rest of my time was free, and I was reading the Bible and journaling and writing poetry and taking walks all over the city where I was living. It was really...
Love it. Yeah.
And as I did that...
It sounds like a Robin book.
I know.
Christian girl in France. Yes.
I can just picture it.
Yes.
It was a lovely time, and I made a lot of friends in the church there. And as I did that, I started to feel uncomfortable with the idea of going to medical school.
Mm.
That's all I could say. It just didn't feel right. And I realized, okay, maybe this is God redirecting me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at the course catalog of what other majors are available if I'm not going to, you know, continue with this medical microbiology thing. And I came across the creative writing major, and I looked at the classes and I thought, they would give me a degree for this? I would do this for fun if I had any free time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always loved to write, mm-hmm. but I'd never, for some reason, had never thought of pursuing it as a major. And so I switched, but I already had so many science classes that I ended up getting the minors in biology and chemistry as well. But so that put me on a slightly different track when I came back. But when I came back to the United States, I went to the Urbana Youth Missions Conference, if you're familiar with that. It happens every other year.
What year did you go?
That would have been 2000 and, let's see, it would have been 2000, the winter of 2000.
Yeah, that conference has had such a powerful effect on so many thousands of young people who just have that sense of, Lord, I know there's something you want me to do, but I can't see it. And Urbana, I mean, the speakers, the way that they have set that up, for those who are really seeking the Lord, it's just such a holy conference. Anyways, you just touched my heartstrings with that one. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it was really an amazing experience for me. And it connected me with a lot of other like-minded, missions-minded, people my age. And really powerful. And as a result, I ended up taking the Perspectives course. If you've heard of it, it's mm-hmm. called Perspectives in World Missions. It's put out by the U.S. Center for World Mission here in Pasadena, California. And I thought I was missions passionate before that. But this course multiplied that by a factor of 10.
Okay, we're going to have to stall. And this is all we've got time for in part one. But I think this is a perfect place because we see God building the story. Yeah. Already preparing. Yeah. And I love the way that God goes before us and he prepares the way. One of the songs I know you were talking about, Like a River Glorious, but also is, I think of that song, Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah, Pilgrim in a Stranger's Land. And, you know, there is that feeling that God is right there guiding us, just, ordering our steps, preparing us for that work, putting that hunger, those desires that he plans on fulfilling and working it. So that was part one with Sharon Markey. We've got her all the way through high school, teaching in Paris and then coming back. And just this building of this desire that probably started around 4 years old and just implanted by the Lord. And so when we come back, there is so much more to Sharon's life. In fact, she's just written a book that's in publication right now. What's the name of the book before we do this?
It's called Finding Home Again.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, that's a great title.
Yeah. And so when we come back, we're going to go into part two. And there might even be a part three, because I am telling you, there is so much to Sharon's story. I mean, you haven't even heard the family, about the family she marries into, which is also amazing. I mean, talk about just
that's our
a
little
gut thing.
Teaser there, it Cheryl.
Is.
Come
it
back,
is.
Listeners.
Come
You want to hear part
yes.
two.
You don't want to miss this, I am telling you.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.